Oh me, oh my. I should be a lot more eloquent than this coming back in, but it feels so good to be back here again. Just in case everyone forgot, myself included, my name's Unkwa Asonye. I'm back in my bag again after a long hiatus, which was at first supposed to be 1 week, which turned into 2 weeks, which I think turned into now 4 weeks or more. If you want to give me an exact count, you can tweet at me at @N_ASONYE. If you want to harass me on Instagram, that's _sometimesJR. It's not too hard to find me. Make sure that when you find this on Apple Podcasts, please rate it 5 stars, leave a review, let me know how it went. It will also be available on Anchor, on Spotify, and on Podbean. But yes, it was a very long stretch. I travel for work, and I was very adventurous the first few episodes about bringing the mic on the road. Didn't work out quite as well. But nevertheless, it is so good to be back. I can gush for nearly an hour. Not sure that's all that you want to hear. But in my time off, my travels have taken me everywhere from the hearts of West Hartford in Connecticut, back home to D.C., well, my home away from home. Got to see some good friends from the George Washington University. It's great to be back on campus. And shout out to my homegirl, Jasmine Bounds. Let me tell you why. During my weekend in D.C., where I was, yes, having fun, but also working, I got a chance to run into Jemele Hill. Yes, that Jemele Hill, the one that left ESPN and now works at The Atlantic. Nobody has figured it out yet. They keep tweeting at The Athletic. I guess it's easy to get them confused. There should be an emoji here for the rolling eyes guy. But anyway, I saw her in a diner. I was looking up and said, oh, snap, that's Jemele Hill. Now, younger me would have probably sat in my corner and gawked. Somehow, I was bold enough to get up and walk over and say, oh, my gosh, honestly, you're one of my heroes. Do you mind if we take a selfie? And she was very nice about the whole thing. Me being nervous, I couldn't take the selfie, but shout out to Alicia, who pulled it off and took the great picture for me. Everything is great. However, my good friend Jasmine Bounds and I had talked, even in undergrad, about doing a podcast together. You won't hear from her here, but if you could see the moment I put the picture up on Twitter, she's like, oh, so you couldn't tell me? I thought we were friends. I thought we were cool. So I was like, all right, I can eat that. But I was excited, and it was also really, really late. We're talking like 3 a.m. I mean, it's unfortunately wasn't the first thing on my mind, but nevertheless, she had her point. Fast forward to today. Actually, we'll take you back 2 days before that. There is a posting that said Jemele Hill will be back on campus at GW. Jasmine is in Columbus, Ohio. I can't lie. I asked her. I said, well, what's the deal with work? I mean, can you pull it off? She said, yeah, I get off Wednesday and I'm off Thursday. And she toyed with making the trip. She really toyed with making the trip. But she did it. And she got her picture and she got to talk to her. I'm excited for her because she has been a Jemele Hill fan for a long, long time. So shouts out to you, Jazzy. If you're hearing this on the way back home or tired at work, I salute you today. May your determination be our determination for the rest of 2018. That's a great opening story. I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. But on to the agenda. In today's episode, we're learning that public pressure can really force somebody's hand. Baseball, what's that? It's hoop season. And what does civic duty really, really mean? But first, a clip that I absolutely hated to see in rotation.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series!
If you haven't learned much about me, I'll give you a brief rundown. I am a native New Yorker. I learned about the game of baseball when I was 8 years old in third grade. I latched on to the Yankees in about 2002. I'll be honest about it. So I missed the three-peat. I missed Scott Brosius' home runs, all that sort of stuff. So my first real Yankee moment memory was Aaron Boone's home run and then the collapse of 2004. So needless to say, when it comes to the Boston Red Sox, there is no love lost. Throw in the fact that for this MLB season, it was neck and neck. The Yankees weren't healthy. I was so confident that if the Yankees won the wild card game, we could take it to Boston. Instead, wrong side of the gentleman's sweep. And the Red Sox pretty much ran the table. I hate that I have to admit it. And for the few Red Sox fans that I respect, I congratulated them. I'm taking it all back because somehow we still live in your heads. It's so funny to me. Now, pulling out 27 rings at this point is kind of stupid because we only have really one claim to a ring this century, and that is in 2009. And frankly, four rings in 15 years after none in 86, that matters. But I'm just curious about how Alex Cora, a manager who goes for the jugular every single time, personally, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm giving y'all compliments y'all don't really deserve. But Alex Cora might be one of my favorite managers in baseball. Baseball is one of those games where feel and intuition is everything, especially since once you make a move, you cannot take it back. Alex Cora showed this postseason that out of the rookie managers, yes, he had a great team, but he was about it. But when he rolled up talking smack about, oh, we beat the Yankees, blah, 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 I'm like, you're still stuck on the first round? How? I expect you to be better. Granted, when Aaron Judge played New York, New York in Fenway's clubhouse and the Red Sox responded in kind, you take that on the chin. When you get what you ask for and you get beat, it is what it is. So I can't beef about the fact that me and a bunch of Yankee fans said, oh, we want Boston. We got Boston and we got God. That's not my issue. I just think it's hilarious that even while you're celebrating your championship, you want to rub it in our faces. When it happened in 2009, I promise you, we weren't that pressed. At that time, we were too happy celebrating the fact that we had a first baseman who could field, switch hit. We had starting pitchers who could go more than five innings. Like, 2009 was a great time to be a Yankee fan. And I wasn't thinking about the Red Sox. Like, it really didn't matter. But y'all are spending day after day shoving it in our faces. And you know what? Sadly, you've earned that right. That's okay. But the Yankee front office should be going in with two thoughts this offseason. Number one, you cannot go down to the Red Sox with a rookie manager who, some of those calls I still shake my head at. They're basic bullpen calls. I'm not going to chronicle them. Look them up if you're really that interested. But in a showdown of rookie managers, got owned. And now there's all this talk about trying to go get Manny Machado or go get Bryce Harper. No, focus on pitching first, please. Seve had the shakes in the playoffs, which was a shame. Like, you got three, four good innings from it in the wild card game, but that was about it. And that's, you can't have that from an ace. And I'm not too hung up on big names either, because Kershaw can't pitch in October either. What's the point of putting him in Yankee Stadium? Dodger Stadium, don't get me wrong, Kershaw is an amazing pitcher. Definite Hall of Famer. But pitching in Dodger Stadium has its perks. Yankee Stadium is not Dodger Stadium. 408 to center. That cavernous right center field. Death Valley. You know, that can help. If you're a left-handed pitcher, that short porch and right does not. And you can make as much ado about that short porch not being a big deal or kind of being a big deal. Oh, the Red Sox took full advantage. So I'm not caught up in the Machado hype. Frankly, neither signing really makes that much sense. Machado makes more sense if only you get him to play third base, because Didi Gregorius, injured or not, is still your shortstop. And you're not going to trade DD, and you're not going to move DD. So unless Manny Machado is willing to play third, doesn't make sense. And Bryce Harper is not going to be a Yankee unless Giancarlo Stanton plays first base. But you have Luke Voit there, who you probably want to prove. And let's say the Yankees try out Greg Bird again, or maybe Neil Walker can man third base. Then you move on Duhar, because you're not taking on Duhar's bat out of the lineup either. And frankly, DHing Stanton, who is a decent outfielder, is kind of a waste. It really is a waste. And once the World Series comes, you saw the Dodgers made some really questionable decisions. You want to talk about managers making weird decisions. Dave Roberts, for the first two games of the series, didn't even play his best lineup. He was that scared of David Price and Chris Sale. They pitched extremely well, and I will not take that away from them. But when it's the World Championship on the line, you play your best lineup. If Max Muncy can't hit lefties, we have a problem. If Clay Bellinger can't hit lefties, you have a problem. And whatever the regular season splits are, it's the postseason. You put your best lineup out there. That's not the time to be cute and play an all-righty lineup. Brian Dozier starting at second? Sure. Kike Hernandez? Chris Taylor? With Bellinger on your bench? In Boston? Where you have nine hitters? Ugh. But anyway, unfortunately, the Commissioner's Trophy is in Fenway Park. It is what it is. But it's always good to know that the evil empire will forever live in your heads, no matter how annoying it gets. Now we gotta be serious for a second, because it always baffles me how quickly public opinion can sway nearly anyone. Sometimes you'd wish it would work on the White House. More on that later. But at this point, we're revisiting the University of Maryland again. Now, if you recall, at a press conference held by President Wallace Lowe of the crown jewel of the Maryland University system in College Park, he said there's going to be a full independent investigation. All right, fine, cool, whatever. And the Board of Regents and said arbitrary board concluded that Durkin made toxic decisions that empowered his strength coach to wild out on a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old men. And they decided that he still deserves to keep his job. Damon Evans, too, the athletic director. I have dear friends who are Terrapins, graduates, fans, all of that. And I saw them all go, wow, what a shame. This is a disgrace. Kind of refreshing after watching Ohio State defend Urban Meyer, but at least Urban Meyer wins rings. It justifies nothing. But Meyer has rings. Durkin has done nothing. He can't even go 500 in the Big Ten. If Maryland was still in the ACC, I don't think he could go 500 there either. And yet you still wanted to keep him? And with that, the student athletes got mad. Talking about guys walking out of meetings, not to mention nearly every media outlet on the West Coast and the East Coast called Maryland five different types of stupid. Small an outlet as I may be, let me continue to pile on. You have the audacity to make a statement about how you will always honor the memory of Jordan McNair, and yet you resolve to keep the very man who put him in that treacherous position in the first place. If you haven't read Barry Savolga's breakdown in the Washington Post, I highly encourage you to read it, because once he goes into all of the detail, it will blow your mind. But let me just say this. It will amaze you what can happen if college athletics is turned on its face. What I mean by that is, once the players have a chance to do anything, it's over with. That's why they whistled down the union when Kane Coulter was at the front of that around 2014, 2015. Because of all the sports, football players have the least amount of leverage. I know we talk a lot about basketball, but hey, if you kept your eyes on that trial, some of them are getting paid. Still below market, by the way. Because if you factor in the amount of economic power these young men bring to their respective universities, it will blow your mind. This is somewhat of an old story, but Michael Porter Jr. committed to Mizzou and season tickets sold out. Picture that for a second. There are some places where season tickets are sold out because they've been in families for years. They go for really high prices, so the same people have them at places like Duke, Michigan State, things of that nature. Nah, Mizzou, it ain't really a hoops town. Yet one 18-year-old commits, boom, everything shut down. And the department raked in more than $2.5 million in revenue more than the year before. So we can cut out that whole, we can't quantify how much they're worth. How much more than the cost for these young men who go to Maryland, who is a basketball school that has football, and then subject them to such dehumanizing treatment? And it wasn't until the whole world said, "You're an idiot," that you fired him 24 hours later while Damon Evans still has a job? Maryland, you run out of words at a certain point. But it makes you realize for one solitary moment that people often do not do the right thing unless they are forced to. I'm glad at least in this connotation that some good was made of it. And yet those young men still have to continue to play. They still have to continue to, quote, honor their scholarships. Whatever. Whatever. So please, spare the sanctimonious everything when it comes to these young guys. I almost hope that they come out to midfield and punt the rest of the season. Probably won't happen, but I'm all about what those kids are doing. And shame on the University of Maryland. Everybody top down. You should be ashamed.
If you didn't like the way that I handled myself in practice, one of the players come up to me. Somebody say something. Anybody.
So the standing deal still has Houston giving up 4 first-round picks for Jimmy Butler. Okay. Bit of a hefty price to pay for a man in his walk year. But hey, if you're going to swing for the fences, I guess swing, because, you know, titles over everything in all aspects. But I think these days he's gotten a bit of a raw deal when it comes to how he's been portrayed. You got to understand, if you know anything about Jimmy Butler, you know how he started. He came from nothing. We're talking about a high school kid who was homeless in high school, scrapped his way through high school, became a fantastic player, went to Marquette, got picked near the end of the first round, has battled ever since. Battled ever since. Now reunited with a coach with whom he had a lot of success in Tom Thibodeau. All of a sudden, there's a lot of friction. But the culture clash can't really be looked over. And I'll tell you why. Wiggins was a number one pick. Karl Anthony Towns was a number one pick. Usually when you are a number one pick, unless you've got the kind of childhood that are like blindside worthy, you had a pretty good life. You got pretty much everything that you wanted. So being challenged every day by a guy like Jimmy Butler, who is, yes, good, but I don't think he's more talented than them. He's even admitted that he's not as talented as them. But I can see why it would be a little bit annoying. But management absolutely fouled the whole situation up. Because the truth is, Jimmy Butler's right. The Wolves underperformed last year. The West is tough. Absolutely it is. But they just snuck in as the 8 seed. When you could argue 1-7, they have enough depth to make some noise. Being the 8 seed, of course they were going to go down to Houston. Of course they were. But you would have expected a lot more to come from that group, injuries and all. And you had the wrong coach to run the system to begin with. Tom Thibodeau ruined Derrick Rose's career. And now they're reunited again. Oh, there's so many levels to this. My goodness. But now we're back at a place where you have the old veteran seemingly hooping and hollering and all that sort of stuff. With the young kids are just like, man, who cares? Why does he care about this, that, and the third? If you knew anything about Jimmy Butler, that would be why. And what management should have done, granted, the Jimmy Butler outburst, y'all can't win without me, this, that, and the third. I would be willing to admit that maybe it's not the best move. But then you trading him, or at least you trying to trade him, it's a very bad message to send. It's not even about power dynamics. It's more about the fact that this is a dude who has always gone full steam ahead. That's just his personality. That's just the way that he is. I don't buy into all the, oh, he wants to be the man, he wants to be the superstar. No, not for a guy who says that these younger kids are better than him, more talented than him. That don't make no sense. At a certain point, people just want to win. And let's be real. If you are on a talented team or in an environment where you see a lot of talented people, but they're going half speed when you can be better, at some point, even you, whether it's at the workplace, whether it's for pickup, whether it's for a group project, if you've got a talented group and you look around and people ain't pulling their weight, you're going to go like, wait, what is this? Only difference is Jimmy Butler makes a lot of money and he made a lot of noise about it and people sort of miss the entire point. He's right. But hey, let him go to Houston. At least the Western Conference Finals will be somewhat fun to watch. I mean, it was fun last year too, but if Houston makes the deal, they might actually have a shot. 4 first rounds though, that's just nuts.
It doesn't matter what the early votes look like. It doesn't matter what the polls look like. We can lose everything. We lost everything 2 years ago. We can lose everything again. Oh, my God.
So we all know what Tuesday is. Election day. Yay. This is supposedly the time that the quote-unquote millennials are to storm the polls and show up and not be lazy and not be complacent about where we are in American history. This is the most important election of our lifetime. Everything is up for grabs, etc., etc., etc. There's a lot to unpack there. Because at a point, you wonder who the intended audience really is. Because if they're shooting for the broad, oh, this is for all the millennials, it doesn't really work. Especially considering the political climate right now. There isn't a whole lot of detail to go into if you've even been paying a little attention. It's unfortunately impossible to avoid. When you have somebody in the White House who calls a white supremacist a very fine person, that enlists racially dog whistle statements in politics. Like, it's impossible to ignore. But the funny twinge about it is that all of a sudden, white people are scared. We've seen so many of these pieces that say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry I voted for Donald Trump. Oh my goodness, I can't believe he actually did all this. I can't believe no one said, stop it. black and brown people have been saying this for ages. Back when Donald Trump was a pop culture celebrity, like real live Fox 5 everywhere, the man had his own reality show. And people were still warning you about this man. Everything was on the table in 2016, and America put him in anyway. And now it's so funny to watch the message of how important it is to vote, because the Democrats have fumbled the ball. I didn't expect to get political, but election day is next week. So let's put it all on the table. Let's talk about it. It's so interesting to me how the Democratic Party really has taken the minority vote for granted. And it's frustrating because if you vote, you're still kind of stuck. You're stuck, quote, compromising for the greater good. Well, if you regard me as less than a human, or you claim that civility is the most important aspect of a conversation about racial reconciliation, there's not much to talk about. There's nothing to compromise about. You're siding with someone who says, I'm a second-class citizen. No. And every step of the way, people have been exposing themselves in terms of why black and brown people should not vote. And the sentiment has certainly gone on both sides of the aisle that I've seen in terms of black voters saying it's really important to vote. Others saying, what's the point? And I get it. I fluctuate daily between, is it worth going to the polls? And we got to try something. I mean, the truth is, it really involves a lot more political activity. And that's frustrating, too. Because can you imagine how many potential black and brown candidates or other minority candidates have brought important racial issues to the forefront to be told, oh, well, we can't handle that right now. Oh, we can't afford that right now. You don't have a choice anymore. It is impossible to avoid. Let that sink in. There is no stepping around it. There is no greater good. Like, this is it. That's why even the Andrew Gillum race is different from Barack Obama's, because Andrew Gillum pushed back. Barack, who's seen as President Obama, who is seen as this Superman with good reason. When you're the first, you kind of do that. But it was very much the, you know, we rise above, we take it on the chin and we press forward. No, Gillum is pushing back. And truthfully, nothing is going to change for the better if those who are mad about what's happening and are in political positions actually say so. Nobody has time for compromise in that regard. Not anymore. Because the truth of the matter is, life for minorities in this country is going to be pretty bad anyway, because he's still in office for 2 more years. And yet, here we are again, being force-fed the narrative that this is the most important election of our lifetime. We need you. Who's we? Y'all don't care about us. Because if you cared, gerrymandering would be a real thing. If you were, voter suppression wouldn't just matter in Georgia right now. And if you were really about it, you'd look at every single state, because it happens in New York, too. Letters in the mail snide comments. It happens everywhere. But people are so fixated on at least trying to turn the tide. Well, what are you going to do with it afterward? Because if you leave people to their own devices and you do not bring a real solution, it is no longer enough to tell anybody to just, oh, you have to go vote. That is not enough. Make it happen. Make it happen. As for me, I'm probably going to vote. But part of that has nothing to do with the messaging. It's about the last shred of optimism I have left. Let's face it. I'm a Bible believing Christian. This world is not my home. I laugh at the news most days because heaven can't be like this, man. Heaven cannot be like this with people misusing the name of God and using it to discriminate and hate other people. I don't see it. So this world is flat out not my home. I've been singing it like a song since 2016. Won't lie to you. But what I will say is that if you are going to get any portion of a minority vote, because let's face it, you cannot win without it, you have some work to do. Do not play the savior. Do not act like you have all the answers, because you do not. And don't just hold a town hall, listen and nod your head for 2 hours, then go back to doing the same thing you used to do. Because as you have seen, business as usual will not cut it, because everything is crumbling. Everything is absolutely crumbling, and now you have a choice. Because if you want to keep doing what you've been doing, everything is over. Everything is over. So, you have a decision to make if you're looking for a blue wave or if you just want improvement in this country. Wake up. When you see that indigenous peoples on this land are not even allowed to enter the Supreme Court because of their headdress, did you ever ask why? Or did you just hop on the bandwagon of saying, oh, this is wrong, while then going back to doing absolutely nothing about it? If you're going to canvass, cool. Know why you're doing it. If you are going to run, even better. Like I said, slight optimism. But you doggone better make sure you know why you're doing it. You doggone better make sure that you do right by everybody. Because the black vote is indeed a weapon. And people will holster it if they need to. And that'll do it for this week. Listen, thanks for joining us. Thanks for clicking play. It honestly means a lot. Feel free to share, feel free to like, feel free to comment. It's across 4 platforms: Anchor, Podbean, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Remember, you can reach me nearly anytime on Twitter at @N_ASONYE and _sometimesJR. Push back. Let's talk. I mean, shoot, we're here now. Might as well leave all our cards out on the table. Until next week, I promise it's coming on time this time. Have a good one. And you know what? Let's be a little optimistic this week. Vote.